power on.
The following is a presentation of the Sovereign Technica podcast feed.
The Man of Tomorrow is here for another little thing we call Sovereign Tech X. And most of the time when I do this, it's because I'm being joined by none other than my astonishing wife,
woo,
the goddess of gaming.
Yes.
That being Ellen Sovereign. Welcome back to some Sovereign Tech.
Woo. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, indeed. So, this actually isn't the first time in recent memory that you've been back. We actually recorded an episode, boy, 2-3 weeks ago that I'm still editing and want and need to get out there. And we're actually putting this episode out ahead of that one, but not that it's going to matter to anybody that hears it, but that one actually got recorded before. But that'll be out in pretty short order. But in that one, we announced that we are working on some all-new, and really an all-new podcast. And I'm not going to go into much details here. We'll save it for when I release that other episode, and we'll get into more of that then. But right now, at least right this second, before we get into what I think is really interesting, really tech, and I guess to give some tease, a sex story, I guess we'll open it up, before we get to that, you've been playing... Talk about a game, actually, that appears to have a ton of sex in it, which blows my mind. You've been playing a game, Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, I have been playing it on and off.
On and off.
I'm about 20 hours in.
And you call that on and off?
Well, yes, because it's been a few weeks since I picked it up, and
sure.
I only get to play it, you know, a few hours here and there.
Yeah, no. I totally understand. I mean, our schedules are insane. And yeah, like I rarely have the time to, to jump into gaming as well. Some nights we get lucky, but other nights not so much. But 20 hours in. But this game, this is being like widely heralded as one of the greatest games of all time. I think some people are even calling it the greatest game of all time. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, firstly, I just want to say, if you love Baldur's Gate 3, where were you when everybody was trying to get into Dungeons & Dragons?
Yeah, right.
I mean, the people who wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons, and there's, like, nobody around that was interested because it was
right.
Too dorky or whatever. But
yeah.
But now they've turned it into a computer game, and it seems to be incredibly popular. So I guess I should just set aside my frustrations about that
right.
And say, this is a really great game, and I completely understand why it would be called Game of the Year. It's incredible. Like, it's beautiful. There's lots of detail.
Mm-hmm.
The storyline is pretty unique compared to most video games I've played. Even the method of gameplay, which is pretty much the same as D&D.
Sure.
In the sense that you determine your... So the outcomes of your decisions are determined not just by, like, the choice of words that you use, but
yeah.
Also by chance.
Yeah, this is an RPG, and, you know, you get a party, it's all that classic stuff. And I think you're bringing up a really interesting point, a couple interesting points, because, yeah, basically your success in anything isn't necessarily based around, like, how quick you press buttons, like many a video game is, right?
No, this one's actually a very slow gameplay.
Yes, yeah, and it's based upon, just like the board game, the real-world board game of Dungeons & Dragons, it's based on dice rolls.
And it's turn-based.
Right, which a lot of classic RPGs that people remember had that mechanic, they just don't always make it, like, front and center, like Baldur's Gate does. The interesting thing, I really liked your point about, you know, where are all the people that wanted to play Dungeons & Dragons, you know, before, but oh no, as long as it's a video game, yeah, like, they don't realize it and they're just rocking it, and yeah, this game is doing gangbusters on any platform that it's on. You're playing it on PC, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting, because you also get, like, the narrator, Like, there's the woman narrator who's telling you what happens and the results of your roles and everything in this
game,
correct?
Which you get to choose that voice.
So it can be a guy, too.
It could be.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I mean, I think that's part of it why a lot of people don't get into Dungeons & Dragons is because nobody wants to be the Dungeon Master, or at least it seems like very few people want to be the Dungeon Master, the guy who or the person who leads the game. And also, I don't think a lot of people are very good at it. Like, when you get a great Dungeon Master, that's a great thing. And the video game kind of provides that. Even then, I still think people should dip their toes into Dungeons & Dragons. But you raise a great point on that. Anyway, please continue. So there's tremendous depth of story here, customization, roll with it.
Yeah, the customization, where should I even begin with that? So at the very beginning of the game, you get to decide what your character looks like, what race they are, what the class is, subclass. So this is like, you get to choose between elf or human or tiefling or
right.
There's half races. And then it breaks down further after that. Like, you can be a wizard, or you can be a paladin.
Right.
I mean, that's all right. Took me a second to think of the word. Yeah, so, you know, you can specialize in, like, being an urchin and pickpocketing and being sneaky, or you can be good at weapons or casting spells. It really just depends on what you're interested in.
Sure, and you get to choose if you have a cock or a vagina, right?
That too, yeah.
Yep. You get to choose interesting.
Your skin color, the shape of your body.
Right.
You know, everything, basically. You can customize it all.
Yeah, I was pretty blown away by that. And I'm not surprised at all that you couldn't... I think what was that... it's not that you couldn't think of the word paladin. I think it was just that to, like, say that. You're such an evil creature yourself that, you know, it took a second for the words to be able to come out.
Yeah, right, I'm not interested in making holy oaths to anything, really.
yeah, yeah.
I'm basically playing Satan in the video game.
You look like him. I mean, a her, but you look... You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, before I lost one of my eyes, yes, yeah. Pretty much.
That's a hell of a story. Yeah.
Hells.
Whoa, oh, ba-dum-tsh. Yeah, so, I mean, how long have you, like, how long have some people been playing this?
Oh, some people have already played through this game multiple times.
Yeah, yeah.
Four or five, at least.
Well, yeah. What do you think one playthrough goes for? Do you have any ideas? Like, 100 hours?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah.
It probably depends on how interested you are in exploring your surroundings
right.
and, like, how familiar you are with the game already.
Right. There's a lot of side quests, that sort of thing?
Yeah, potentially. If you want to do that, you can, but it's not necessary.
Yeah, so... So, like, what got you in on this? What got you excited about playing this one? I mean, I played 1, 2, and Siege of Dragonspear and everything. Like, I've played those over the decades, because that's how long the series has been around. But I've yet to play this one myself. I knew of it, and, you know, I knew everybody was raving about it. But, I mean, like, what got you to say, yeah, I want to play that?
Oh, that's a really complicated story. So, I guess I was feeling a bit... of malaise, I guess, around video games at the moment because, you know, I'd gotten to a point in Skyrim where I can't really progress any further and I don't feel super interested in starting the game completely over again.
Right.
Because in Skyrim, you know, you have all of the same storylines
yep.
over and over again. There's not much variability in that. And again, it's kind of a dated game at this point. It's still worth playing. But, the storyline doesn't change, and you don't really get to, experience a huge amount of variety. Like,
sure.
A lot of the quest lines are, okay, we're going to, like, kill a bunch of Draugr again. Or
right.
we're gonna go fight a dragon.
Right.
Or, you know, like, raid some camp. So, I'm kind of, like, getting to the point in Skyrim where it's not as interesting to me as it used to be. Same thing with Tears of the Kingdom. It's a beautiful game.
Right.
It's just, you know, I've played so much of it that I'm kind of, like, not interested in exploring the world anymore at this point.
Yeah.
So I was looking for something that was kind of a sandbox, again, where it was a whole new world to explore and different dynamics.
Right.
And then I heard, I have a lot of coworkers actually that play this game and
uh-huh.
that also play Dungeons & Dragons, and they were telling me about this game over and over again, and I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll give it a shot. I mean, it does sound pretty interesting.
Right.
So I tried the first Baldur's Gate, and that was very slow, very clunky. It was hard for me to make it through even just the tutorial at the beginning.
Yeah, a couple quick points. One, would you say Skyrim is your favorite game of all time?
Yeah, I mean, at this point in time, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Probably. This might take it.
It might, yeah, depending on where it goes.
Yeah. Okay, second point. Yeah, so you were playing Baldur's Gate 1 on Switch.
Right.
Now, that is a game that you can get hundreds of hours out of, especially with all the expansion packs and everything. The Switch, I'll say this, as somebody, because I actually started playing it as well on Switch again, and I haven't played this game in, you know, over 20 years, probably. The Switch version of Baldur's Gate 1 is probably the best.
It's easier than the PC version.
By a long shot. Yeah, you get to move independently. Like, you're not just, like, click to move. You're not doing all that. The click wheel design in it that's on the Switch that lets you get through the commands quickly is genius. Fucking genius. Really, really pleased by that.
Yeah, we say relative to the original PC game, it's quick. But yeah. Relative to the mechanics of Baldur's Gate 3, it takes... It's five times as long.
Yeah, well, that's still
a character.
Right, that's my point. Is that even with those advancements and improvements on that game, it's still, you know, it clunky is the word. You're still completely right about that. Even though tremendous stories and all that stuff in it, it's still incredibly clunky. So I'm just saying this as somebody who played the hell out of the original. I totally get where you're coming from. And also, I think I can already see, just in what I've experienced in the background of you playing Baldur's Gate 3, where there's just so many advantages over a massive game like Skyrim. Which, granted, Skyrim is over 10 years old now. But, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, I really like that there are sort of pre-recorded cutscenes for Baldur's Gate. So
right.
You do get a break from the gameplay once in a while, and you can just... you walk into a certain situation and then, you know, the video takes over and you have to just kind of see events unfold from there. And it gives you more information and hints about what's happening to you and in the wider realm.
Right.
So I think that is really something that sets it apart because these are so well done. The voice acting is beautiful.
Yeah.
The animation is excellent. Sometimes I play this game and my computer gets so hot because the graphics are just that good.
Yeah. Do you get hot playing it? No.
Well, I expect I will at some point in the future.
Well, I've heard some of these characters are... I mean, the character storylines, some of what we've heard are like, amazing. In fact, it really brings to mind for me one of my concerns with these sort of open world kind of games... I mean, I guess this would fall under the realm of an open world game. One of my concerns with it is, and I think some games are already starting to do this, like maybe Starfield. I don't know if there are some others where they're actually using generative AI to like write the stories or the side quest or whatever, or the dialogue and everything. And I think you really lose something in that. Like the finely crafted dialogue that was used for, say, Skyrim, or even for classic Baldur's Gate games. I don't know if this is all true for 3, but I kind of hope it's not. And certainly for the pre-rendered cutscenes, there's no way that generative AI language is being used for that. And the other part of it, how you know it's not, is... Or, well, that's not true, because in the future they could do generative AI for the voice work. But the voice acting in this is just second to fucking none, from what I've heard you playing of Baldur's Gate 3. I don't have a computer powerful enough right now to play it. So that's the only reason I haven't been playing it myself. But, yeah, I mean, would you say, like, voice acting, all that stuff, top-notch, feels like you're playing a movie?
Yeah, I think that's what I just said.
Yeah.
But, as far as what I've heard from other people who are playing this game about the storyline and some of the characters, it's really making me feel like I have to see this through because there's just, you know, there's something really moving that you will be able to take part in and experience later on in the storylines.
And right.
I think that's you know, that's something that always gets me hooked in video games, is when you can make that emotional connection to the storyline and feel like you're gaining something from playing. Not just that this is mindless entertainment, but, like, it really makes you reflect on your choices in the real world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think probably part of the reason that that really works is because it's Dungeons & Dragons, because it's a realm that has been so well developed since the 70s, you know, or it's not a realm, but like a mythology that has been just constantly hammered on and added on and, you know, or added to. It's, I think that gives the opportunity for these characters, because they have such a great foundation to stand on, it gives them a great opportunity to just be such powerful characters, powerful in the sense of emotionally powerful, you know, artistically powerful. And, I mean, as far as the other kind of powers, that's really all up to the game player. But any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, so far I'm just really enjoying the game. And I really hope people do check it out. It's, you know, a bit on the pricey side, but you get a lot for what you pay.
Oh, sure. I mean, yeah, I know that that's a very popular topic today, is the price of video games, because they seem to just keep going up. At the same time, you know, I was there. I've talked about this a million times on the show, but I mean, I was there in the 80s when the American video game boom started, or the resurgence, I should say. You know, games were $60 when I was a kid, and you're lucky if you got two to six hours out of those games. You know, now you have right? At least as far as like actual playthrough, if you knew what you're doing. Really, the way that, that game designers back then would make a game difficult or make you have to put in more time was just by making the game difficult. You know, it would be just make this stupid hard, and that way they have to spend more time figuring it out, or they have to put more quarters in the case of arcades or whatever. But bottom line being, for $60-$70, you're getting so much more fucking video game today. It's crazy. Like, I mean, so...
Yeah, I could see myself playing this game for 200 hours.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, lately, you know, I've been playing Age of Empires 2.
Oh, again. I've been playing that too.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, it's the classic comfort food game, even though it's more than comfort food. I mean, this is, like, this is dense stuff.
It's strategy. It's yeah, all right. About the art of war.
Right. But, I mean, that's a game... I could play that game the rest... That one game... I could probably play that the rest of my life and be happy.
I have been playing it my entire life.
Right, right, sure, yeah. I mean, that's amazing. That game's, you know, over 20 years old now. And, it, I mean, yeah, they keep, like, updating it and doing whatever. But, it, you know, it's been around forever, and we got a cat getting in, a cat in the bag, and the bag is not in the river. But that's the studio cat captain. Every great show should have a studio cat. Anyway... So, yeah, Age of Empires 2, I mean, that's the thing. You know, that game, the base game, still, what, costs $40 today? I mean, is accounting for inflation, it's cheaper today than it was when it first came out. And you could play that damn thing forever. You know, I mean, it's insane. So, like, in one sense, I get where people complain about the price of games. On the other hand, it's like, no, not really. Now games are often priced, you know, at, you know, very reasonably.
Yeah, oh, and I'm not complaining about the price.
No, I know you're
not. I certainly hope that the voice actors get paid well, and the animators.
Yeah.
The story writers. I mean, everything about this game is just beautiful, and it really makes me want to dig into it, especially getting to interact with people who have played it multiple times.
Uh-huh.
And getting little hints and tricks about things. I'm still learning the strategy for how to play this game, but it's definitely been a learning experience and super fun.
Yeah.
The only challenging thing is, like, if you don't know what you're doing, you can get into a bad situation before you're strong enough to handle it.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a game, just on what I've experienced through you, it's definitely a game, I think, especially if you have, like, a broader knowledge of Dungeons & Dragons, that can be very helpful, you know? Like, knowing what a mind flayer is, knowing, you know, this and that. Like, that, I think that can... That can ease kind of the learning curve a bit. I don't know. So.
Yeah. I've gotten tips about, like, maybe you should sneak in this part, or maybe you should, like, dip your weapon into the fire. You can, like, do these actions. They don't actually count against you when you're in battle mode. So there's a lot of little interesting things like that that I'm picking up so far, but definitely check back in next time we record. I think I'll be more well versed.
No, we'll talk about it. I'm just, again, I'm absolutely blown away by this game, and it's definitely something I want to get into as well. Phenomenal stuff. Okay. So all of that said, of course, we also talk about a mind fuck, not a mind flare, but we just finished the original series of Neon Genesis Evangelion. Whoa, boy. We're going to have to do that as a review in a future episode. Like, we're going to have to talk about that. But
right, because we're still watching the movies.
Yes. Yeah, we're catching kind of the movies that, well, I don't want to give too much away, even though the show's been out since the mid-90s.
Yeah, but it's my first time watching it through.
Yeah. And I think for other people, like, I mean, even if you're told, I don't think people can really expect, like, the ending for the original series, just real quick, for the original run. Like, did you see that coming?
No.
No, okay, right. And that's the thing. Even if people tell you what it's going to be, you don't get it until you see it executed anyway. So, spoilers really shouldn't matter, but regardless, that's a review we've got to do in the future. But a subject I want to get into right now, okay, has to do with AI and sex. Now, me, I'm somewhat of an expert in AI, or at least modern generative AI.
And I'm somewhat of an expert in sex.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Took the words right out of my mouth. We're the perfect pair to talk about this.
This story was written for us to talk about.
Yes, exactly. So, now, I mean, and I'll lay out the caveats on a lot of this. But this is going to be something. This is something that's happening. This is something that... It's a very strange thing. The relationship between generative AI like ChatGPT and even the image generators like DALL-E 3, you know, and some others, they don't really allow for sex. Like you can rarely discuss, you have to basically trick the large language models like ChatGPT or some others. You have to trick them into getting them to talk about sex. Or, you know, you have to kind of make it abundantly clear that you're talking about it in a medical or academic way. And that's really the only way you can get away with it. So what's happening is there are other companies who are taking advantage of generative AI and their own models, or they're paying for access to, say, ChatGPT or something. And they are implementing generative AI into either sexy texting, talk, whatever, or into something else like what we're going to talk about here. And this is a story from Mashable by Anna Iovine. And it's Need Sex Help? Try This AI Sex Coach. The subheader on it is Nothing Can Replace Comprehensive Sex Ed, but this can provide some help. So, I want to get it. It's not a long story, so I want to read it. And then I really want to break this down, because I think there's some very important things to understand about this. And there are some cultural shifts that I feel like are occurring that it's relevant to. So let's read the story. And maybe if there's a point where, if you want me to stop to make a point, Ellen, just say so. But we'll go through and maybe I'll stop as well at certain points. So here we go. And the story, by the way, is from, it's fairly fresh. It's from September of 2023. So, you know, whatever, 3-4 months old. But this is still a really new thing. So here we go. In case you haven't heard, sex education in the U.S. is in dire straits. A report by Sex Ed for Social Change points out that 749 new bills touching on sex ed, LGBTQ, and reproductive rights and gender-affirming care have been introduced this year, with 65% aiming to restrict these rights. Nothing will replace comprehensive sex education. Evidence-based, age-appropriate, trauma-informed, and LGBTQ-affirming teaching for young people. In the absence of that, however, there are other resources folks can lean on. Not safe for work education sites are available to pick up the slack, including Be Educated, or maybe they call it Beducated. I don't know exactly how that's pronounced.
It looks like beducated.
Beducated, yeah, which, clever, okay, punny, which just launched its AI sex coach. Beducated's AI sex coach provides advice from the site's library of 100-plus online sex courses on topics ranging from cunnilingus to roleplay. If you aren't subscribed to Beducated, you can send the chatbot up to 10 messages a day for free. And there's also a 24-hour free trial. And I think it said rope play earlier, not role play. I said role play.
Rope.
Like, yeah, rope play.
With ropes.
Yeah, which, yay, Japan. Let's see, there's, okay. So, yeah, so there's a subscription at like $30 a month, which I think, doesn't that sound a little steep?
Not if you're a young person who doesn't have a lot of experience in these fun things.
Yeah, I suppose that's fair. But then if you're a young person, I mean, do you have $30 a month? I don't...
People can afford Netflix. They can afford something like this.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we'll keep reading. When you open up the chatbot, you'll see a message encouraging you to ask if anything you want to know and learn about your intimate life, with a caveat that it's experimental and not medical advice. There are even some questions to get you started, like, quote, how can I have more kinky sex, end quote, and, quote, how can I reach an orgasm, end quote. So it gives you prompts, which I'll admit is one of the more helpful things of generative AI, is that not just in, like, giving you prompts for, like, oh, here's a question that you should ask or something like that, but it just gives you ideas. It can give you ideas based upon what you're putting in. And that's one of the really, you know, I've always said this, or I, not always, like it's been, hasn't even been months, I think, since it's been this, but I really appreciate that Microsoft rebranded their generative AI to use the term Copilot instead of like Bing Chat or whatever, because that's the way to think of generative AI. It's not smart. It's just a Copilot. It's just something, you're the pilot. You know, you're out there like Bodhi Rook in Rogue One. I'm the pilot. But, you know, you're the pilot. It's just assisting you, helping you out, which is fine. I think that's great. And so in this sense, you know, giving you these prompts, that could be very helpful, especially, like you said, Ellen, if it's something you're not knowledgeable in. So let's keep reading. Mashable tested out AI Sex Coach and found that it provides solid nuggets of information. And then directs you to a beducated course. So, for clarity here, the courses are done by humans, okay? Even though it's like getting you started on the conversation, it is ultimately leading you to humans about it. Now, and we're going to get into a bigger subject around this in a minute. So, this makes sense considering the platform made it and serves as a reminder that chatbots can't replace quality education. And there's examples. I'll have a link for this story, particularly in the show notes, because you can kind of see what a lot of this looks like, some of which we will read. Anyway, quote, the latest trend of global restrictions tightening on sex ed are upon us and are determined to fight back, end quote, said Beducated co-founder CEO Maria Freya in the press release. Quote, Beducated AI Sex Coach emerges as a beacon of hope, offering an expert-backed resource for learning about sexual health, end quote. Beducated doesn't just teach safety, Freya went on, it champions pleasure and empowerment in the face of adversity. As the sex coach was trained on Beducated's courses, it'll provide pleasure-affirming help. Okay, so...
Well, that's nice that it's pleasure-affirming, and it's not just, you know, factual. It's meant to be... you know, sort of like pro-human experience.
Yeah, so a couple points on this, and that's a great thing to mention. And I think it's, I'm glad that the story brought it up, because I actually think there's a real problem. I understand the dangers inherent in allowing, say, ChatGPT to run roughshod based on somebody's contextual commands or prompting to talk about sex. You know, like, I get the concerns around that. Very strange things could happen. And anyway, I think most people's imagination could take them as far as they want to go on that. But there's a problem in that as well, which I think is actually far worse, in that because ChatGPT or because generative AI, you know, LLMs, because they are programmed to not talk about sex, it's reinforcing this Western idea that sex is bad. Sex is not a good thing. You know, like, you have this amazing technology that could do something like what Beducated is doing here. Beducated isn't exactly doing that, and we'll talk about that. But you really, like, again, when you put, it's censorship. And, you know, when you put the black bars over, you know, a woman's nipples, right, you're inherently making them taboo. You're inherently making them, or especially, not inherently, but kind of unconsciously, making that, oh, that's something bad, you know? And I feel like LLMs, you know, having limitations on matters pertaining to sexuality is really the same thing, and that's its own problem. So, in one sense, I'm glad Beducated is doing this. Do you have any thoughts on what I just shared there?
Yes, I think it's interesting what you were saying about restrictions on these AI, you know, modeling software, because they don't have any inherent morals. I mean, they can only repeat what humans have already told them.
Right.
And as far as they're concerned, there is no right or wrong. And they have the power and the capability to create anything that a human requests of them, as long as they have the sufficient data bank to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe what people are afraid of is just seeing the dark and taboo side of themselves, you know, just given this tool to really visualize and bring those things to life. And honestly, I feel like that's something that only hampers human development, because we're not able to shine light on those things that people are uncomfortable with.
Yes. Yeah.
And like you were saying, you know, people could say that they're, that this could be used for, you know, whatever they might consider unethical. Take for, I don't even know if I want to go into that, but I'm just saying, like, if we don't allow for tools to explore all of these possibilities, then how can we, you know, allow ourselves as humans to feel that these tools are empowering us?
Right.
We need to be able to learn from mistakes and from feedback. And if these tools are as restricted as, you know, not being able to talk about sex, then, you know, we're really just holding ourselves back.
Yeah, yeah. And this is really a shame. And you're raising a great point, because this is what I call the deep darks. Okay, and I know you've heard me say that a ton of times, where it's the things you feel like, oh, I can't say that out loud. Or you might even self-censor and say, oh, I can't think about that, and I can't do that. And where generative AI might actually, or at least having a theoretically non-judgmental environment, which is so important for human growth, could allow you to explore. Now, I call them deep darks, not because they're bad, not because they're evil, but like you said, Ellen, it's because light doesn't shine on them often. That's why they're dark. Okay. I mean, they might be seen as dark thoughts in one dictionary sense of that term, because, again, it is perhaps a societal taboo of some kind. But if you, like, don't take the time to explore, wait, why is this coming up for me? Why am I even having these thoughts? Why is that there? You can't really get at the core of who you are if you don't even explore those parts, if you don't explore those or push, perhaps, at those boundaries.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's just a societal it's a societal taboo. It's a societal restriction. I mean, for thousands of years almost, humans have been restricted in what they can and can't do in the bedroom, or how they express themselves in public, even. And that's really unfortunate, because people are full of all of these wonderful, beautiful feelings, and expressing that is self-actualization. You know, it's the most wonderful feeling.
Right.
So it really is unfortunate that there's such restrictions on AI. I guess it's, you know, a positive change that there is this tool being invented to help people learn about sex, because certainly most people feel like they can't ask those around them or discuss it openly with their friends or family or, you know, whoever.
Right.
So at least having an outlet for not just conversation, but genuine education and empowerment, I think that's, you know, a really positive change for the AI space.
Yeah, totally. And I want to talk more about how this exactly works, and we'll give one example of what that looks like, because it is on the more basic side, but then we're going to extrapolate more beyond that. But just to kind of prove your point, look, rape is a bad thing, right? Non-consensuality is a bad thing. Okay.
Careful how you use that word bad.
Well, that's
confusing too.
Fair. Good point. Okay. But non-consensuality is an assault on the individual, right?
If that's what we're talking about is non-consensual
that's
sex,
what I mean by that.
Then yes, that is very tragic.
Yeah.
And it's harmful.
I love that you're being really, really particular on this because
well, there's a good reason for that. Because bad can also mean good in a sexual context.
Yes, right. Those terms can you know, it's the pyramid can get turned upside down. Okay. Do you want to expand more on that?
No, please continue.
Yeah, so my point is, at the same time, okay, so non-consensuality, not good. Okay, but we have, you know, some anecdotal, some beyond anecdotal, evidence to suggest that, and it's not just women, but across the gender spectrum, it's very common for people to have rape fantasies.
Yeah, I think we did this a story covering that a few years ago, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this a few times, even on Free Talk Live. I know we've talked about it. But the reason is, now you say, well, then that means people like must actually want to get that. And it's like, no, you don't get it. It's a fantasy, which means that the individual is ultimately actually in control. The individual with the fantasy is in control. It's not non-consensual. I mean, the individual having the fantasy, I mean, when you're having a fantasy, you're basically like God.
Okay? Right.
And so, you know, there's consent has not gone out the window. It's totally there. It's more there than it is in reality. Okay. And that's the thing, though. I mean, the reason that I'm bringing this up is, if you just said to somebody, you know, oh, I had this rape fantasy, or even if you said, like, say the phrase, like, I'd like rape or something along those lines, okay?
Who would say something like that?
How dare they? Who would say that? Anyway, so, but if you said that, most people would be like, oh, you know, shocked. And they said, well, what's wrong with you? You need to go get therapy. You need to do this. You need to do that. Now, everybody on the planet Earth needs therapy. I'm not arguing against that. But understand that the fantasy is a completely different thing. And if you don't have somebody who is, say, like this, and this isn't an advertisement for Be Educated. I have problems with this, and we'll get into them, okay? But if you're not, like, pleasure-affirming and understanding of sexual fantasies and how they operate, you know, you could type in potentially to this AI and say, like, why do I have rape fantasies? And the AI could easily respond and say, and give you reasons and say, guess what? It's not actually dictionary definition rape because you're in control, you know, during the fantasy. But those are the fine lines that people aren't willing to explore, because otherwise what the person, you know, if you don't have these kind of non-judgmental environments to explore yourself with, what happens is the person goes through their whole life thinking, oh, wow, I'm a twisted individual. I'm this horrible person because I'm into rape or something, when that's not what's going on.
Yeah, and this just seems to break down into more of a problem with language because...
Oh, yeah.
You know, what you're describing, if somebody has a fantasy about forceful sex, that's not technically rape because they're giving consent. We just don't have a word for what that is.
Right.
Not anything that is succinct enough, anyway. So, yeah, I think that there just needs to be a more open conversation about, you know, what it is that people find pleasurable, because it's an experience that they're looking for. It's not necessarily, you know, what people take the word to mean.
Yeah. I think another issue here, and I love that you brought up language. Of course, I like to do that all the time as well. I love that you brought this up. And I want to get back into the AI aspect of this. But let's talk about sex for a minute. No salt and pepper, okay? Was that salt and pepper? Let's talk about sex, baby. I think so. Okay. But let's talk about it. Just like the word love means 10 billion different things, right?
Right.
There's romantic love, there's platonic love, there's friendship love, there's love of your children, there's love of your mother and father. Like
there's agape love.
Yeah, there's right. There's all these different types of love. Here's the problem. I think this is, I mean, and that's actually, this is also true for fear, which is its own problem, but this is also true for the word sex. I think that there's a lot of different kinds of sex, and I don't mean that there's doggy style and there's missionary position and there's this and that. I think that there's, I mean, there's certainly all those and they're wonderful, but
You're saying it doesn't have to be penis and vagina.
Well, it doesn't have to be that, but even then, I think sex is a shitty word because sometimes you want slow sex. Sometimes you want hard sex. Sometimes you want, I love that you use the word forceful. Sometimes you want forceful sex. Sometimes you do, like you are consenting to be taken at any given moment, right? Like in a TPE, right? Total power exchange or
right.
Something like this. We have to come up with horrible phrases like TPE, you know, to kind of describe that sort of thing. But that's the thing is like, there's so many different types of sex that you could want at any given moment. And sex can mean something totally different to other people. So again, some like it hard, some like it soft.
Yeah. And then there's also, and I think everybody knows this at this point, but
sure.
You know, there's also non-penetrative sex. There's oral sex.
Totally.
There's,
yep.
You know, just even fondling is a form of sex.
Right.
I guess I'm wondering, do you feel like there is a form of sex that's not physical at all, that's more so just, you know, psychological, maybe?
Psychological sex? Well, you see, I mean, my quick answer is yes, but I think
tell
me more. You see, I love that you're bringing this up because you're hitting at it. This is the problem with the word. Go ahead.
I thought you were going to say like sexting or cyber sex or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I think even just talking to people, not necessarily directly about, you know, sex, can be in a way sexual if it is arousing.
Oh, totally. I mean, if I was sitting at a dinner table with Carl Sagan, my ass would be getting taken willfully the whole time. I mean, and there is a very real chance that dinner would end with a side of cream jeans in the real world, right? So,
oh yeah,
yeah, right. Same for you. I know. So, and that's
I'd show up to dinner with no clothes on.
Yeah, right. You know, but that's a man who could talk to you, and is talking to you is making love to you. You know, his talking to you is taking you in every orifice. And even your ears, right? Because that's where the sound goes.
Yes, his vocalizations are just so beautiful.
Well, and what and everything he has to say is just wonderful. Yeah, so sure, totally. You can have, and I mean, I'm only half tongue-in-cheek about Carl Sagan. You know, and
yeah, like you guys have no idea how often he talks about bending over for Carl Sagan.
Totally. I mean, and you too, you know.
Sure, of course.
Right. I mean, and look, you know, if he was still here and you wanted to go and have dinner with him without clothes on, I'd be like, go. Like, of course you wouldn't wear clothes. But
yeah, you'd understand.
I would totally understand.
I appreciate so much.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway. I can admit when someone's the better man. There aren't many. But he's one of them. He's one of, like, maybe two. No.
That you know of.
Yeah, right. Okay. That's a great point to bring up. But that's the thing, is that, we have to put all these qualifiers on the word sex to understand what we're even beginning to talk about. But we always just use the shorthand of sex, you know. Rarely do people, you know. I mean, like the best that happens is okay. Maybe you talk about which hole's being used, right? You know, is it oral, anal, whatever? I guess that was kind of crass of me to say it as holes, but anyway. But you know, like we might do that. We might talk about position. Maybe talk about speed. But like. there's no conversation around kind of the intent, the
the kinkiness?
Yeah, maybe the level of kinkiness. If I'm even having, it's because the word doesn't exist. I'm having a hard time even coming up with the word for it. Like, what is the drive? What is the level of desire? What is the, you know, I mean, like, yeah, we have concepts of like the quickie or something, but yeah, it's such a poor term that just gets tossed around, just like love. It just gets tossed around all over the place. And as to where there are things that are just, they're completely different. They're not even remotely related to each other, you know? I mean, I get fucking annoyed, and hey, I've been there. I used to be one. Like, when people talk about polyamory and they use examples of, well, can you still love all of your children the same amount? You wouldn't say which one's your favorite. So why can't you have relationships with other people, you know, where the love is the same?
That's not true.
Yeah, that's
everybody has favorites.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, well, that. Yeah. First off, that's a lie. Yeah. First off, that's a complete lie. Yes. Parents do have a favorite child. Absolutely. Okay. I know I was one. So but that's the thing, is that kind of argumentation is bullshit, because the love for a child is a completely different thing. It's not just the same level. It's a completely different emotion.
It's a different instinct.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. Yes.
There is a maternal and paternal instinct people may or may not have.
Right.
There's also an instinct to sex for the majority of people.
Yes. Yes.
And I think the instinct underlies everything psychological.
Yes.
Like, what is it that turns you on or arouses you? And what is it that you're most interested in?
Right.
How do you see yourself, and how do you see your ideal partner?
Right.
You know, these are all things that are kind of, you know, developed on top of that instinct.
Yes. I love you. I love that you're bringing up instinct, because all of this is, we're going to get back to the AI part of this conversation because it's important, but we're actually laying great groundwork here, and I didn't plan on that.
Yeah, we are literally animals.
Yeah, you took the words right. Ah, oh, this is why I'm married to you. You took the words right out of my mouth. That's what I was going to say, is that, you know, like, that moment happens where you're like, oh, I don't, yeah, why did I fuck this person? Because, like, it's like my instincts just took over. Yes, they fucking did, because you're an animal.
Yeah, it's okay to just want to sometimes. Yeah,
right, exactly. It's like, you know, but we're, again, in our science, even in, it's ironic because I feel like even in our very, quote-unquote, evidence-backed scientific civilization, we still, as humans, push back on this notion for some stupid fucking reason that we're not just animals. I mean, we are more than animals, but we are still just animals at the same time, you know, or we are still animals at the same time. We can be, you know, multiple things. It's hypostatic, but
yeah, we still have instincts just like our animal forefathers.
Right.
But at the same time, we have this ability to overcome instinct with, you know, willpower, with reasoning.
Yes.
Not that there's necessarily a need to do so all of the time.
Right.
I think it's important to allow yourself to experience instincts in their pure form.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
So we do have to recognize that we have them.
Yeah, bingo.
And we have to accept them in order to really feel whole as human beings.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really one of the major problems today, including with our fraught relationship with our sexuality. You know, and the reason an AI like this exists, you know, Beducated or whatever, and these courses even exist, is because we do ignore our instincts. We don't respect them, or we even think of them as somehow, again, bad.
Yeah,
quote unquote,
well,
bad.
Society has taught us that our sexual instincts are bad.
Right.
That they're taboo.
Right.
And that is what causes a lot of these psychological issues for people.
Yeah.
Especially around sex and self-esteem. Is just feeling like what they want is wrong or bad somehow. But it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think we run into a whole lot of trouble when we don't respect our instincts. We don't respect where we came from. And I mean, it's like, you know, somebody, especially in the 21st century, you know, someone gets mad at you because you didn't text them back within 5 minutes, or maybe even best case scenario, oh, you didn't text me back until like 2 days later. And it's like, oh, I'm so fucking sorry. My brain was developed to like gather nuts and, you know, and maybe
munch on some kale.
Yeah, munch on some kale or something. And but I'm dealing with this constant influx of information. You know, I'm getting these notifications all over the place, but that all my brain was meant to do was just, you know, go get some food. And like, again, we don't respect where we came from. We don't respect how we're built, you know, and that's crazy. I mean, I'm even reminded of one of the greatest movies of all time, Devil's Advocate, you know, where Al Pacino, as Satan himself, you know, comes out, he says, it's the goof of all time. God gives man instincts. And then what does he do? I swear, for his own amusement, for his own private cosmic gag reel, I am quoting the movie verbatim, he sets the rules in opposition, right? Look, but don't touch. Touch, but don't taste. Taste, but don't swallow. You know, and while you're jumping from one foot to the next, he's up there laughing his sick fucking ass off. That's an exact, I got the whole thing. Okay, you folks go on YouTube, you can check me on that. I guarantee you I said that all perfectly. So anyway, but that's the rub, is that like we have these instincts, but then God or civilization or society, whatever you want to, you know, put in as your stand-in sky daddy, tells you that those are wrong, you know, and tells you like, oh no, that's not how it works. And I mean, that's insane. You know, like, talk about messing with people's heads. It's no wonder that people are turning to AI or turning to whatever.
I'd rather them turn to AI than to choir boys.
Oh.
That was a total dig at religion.
Wow, sick burn.
No, I'm just saying religion
is... Hold on,
is
I got to get a fire extinguisher here. Jesus.
I feel like religion is the fucking root of this entire problem that civilization has with sex. Like, we have such a dissociative relationship with it because for so long religion has told us that God does not want us to have fun sex. He doesn't want us to have pleasurable sex. He wants us to only have sex for recreation. Yeah. And, oh, you can't covet. You can't look at other... lust after other people.
Right.
You have to just keep your blinders on and pretend like you're happy just having sex for creation.
Right.
And that's just, like you were saying, you know, completely counter to our instincts.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why religion made that rule. Maybe it was so that they could keep the population under control better.
Oh, it totally is. I mean, because effectively what you have to trick people into, and this is true for government, for God, for, you know, take your pick of the structure, you have to convince people that they do not live for themselves. You have to convince people that they are not acting under enlightened self-interest. And the instant you do that, I mean, agency's gone, you know, the instant you do that, then you can program at will, you know, when what you should be saying to people is, no, you don't live for God. Thou art God. You are God. You live for yourself.
Do what thou wilt.
Do. Yeah. Fuck yes. Man, bring out those monks of Mendenheim. Totally. I'm with you. So, yeah, you're completely right to bring up that religion is such a problem in this. And boy, oh, I would love to. There's a church of AI now. I'd love to.
Oh, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah. Well, it's coming back. It had been created. Like, a guy had started it some years ago, and now that like generative AI is here, oh, he's shining right now. We're not going to get into that story in this one. Maybe in the future, but yeah. So okay, let's get a little bit back to this AI. How about that?
Okay.
Do you have more you want to say, or?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Let's keep rocking this. So, I want to be clear on this. Like, I know people's initial, because here we are, we're saying, no, this AI might actually be a pretty good thing. Okay. And I'm going to read an example of what it does. But I think that what the initial response that a lot of people would have to this is that, yeah, especially people who are admittedly very intelligent, you know, as far and knowledgeable as far as, you know, generative AI goes. And they would, you know, they'd probably say something like, yeah, but if it's just pulling from the internet, you know, half the stories on the internet are probably written by AI in the first place. And so it's garbage in, garbage out, and it could be giving terrible advice.
But this story said that this AI chatbot pulls from their database.
Yes.
Which is written by experts.
Yes, exactly. And that's where I'm like, no, everybody, calm the fuck down. This is actually, in a way, being done right. I'm still going to have critiques. But in a way, this is being done right. You hit it exactly, Ellen. Because, you know, like when I use ChatGPT, my favorite way to use it, I don't like using the open ChatGPT where it's pulling from the internet. My favorite way is to create my own GPT where I upload my own books, my own PDFs, my own sources, and then I ask it questions within that very tight, condensed framework. And that's all this is doing. So this is not pulling from the entire internet. This is supposedly pulling from experts. Okay. Now, if you're going to do it, that's the right way to do it. All right. That way you're not pulling bullshit from some idiot's blog, you know, or something else. I'm going to read quick here one of the examples of what this looks like when it comes out. So it's where is the G-spot? And it responds. So that's the question that you ask it. It responds, welcome back. Sure, I can help you with that. The G-spot is a sensitive area located inside the vagina. To find the G-spot, you would curve your first two fingers like the letter C and slide them into the vagina. The G-spot can be felt as a slightly rigid area at the top of the vaginal canal, located approximately an inch or two in behind the external clitoris. If you're interested in more in-depth information about the G-spot and how to stimulate it for pleasure, there is a comprehensive lesson titled Unleash the G-Spot in the Yoni Massage course by Maria Freya. Remember, every person is different, so it might require some exploration to find the exact area that feels best for you or your partner. Anyway.
Dang! Can we just get, like, every man to read this, please? Because definitely can confirm no person that I've had sex with, besides women, know about this.
Right.
And actually practice it.
Right. Right. So, and well said. Also, good luck even finding male doctors that'll believe the G-spot exists. Maybe that has changed and when I say the past couple years, I mean maybe the past 2 years that has finally started to change. But even like when I started podcasting over 10 years ago, no, most doctors are like, the G-spot doesn't fucking exist. You could probably still go online and there's stories from 2023, 2024 that say the G-spot doesn't
exist. Okay, well, how about you ask actual fucking women?
Yeah, well, right. Right.
Because I'm sure they will tell you that does.
Right, but what do women know? You know, come on.
Oh, just our own bodies. Just our own physiology. And what feels good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I got it. I'll give it credit in this. You know, it says some very right things. One, it fucking exists. Thank you. Two, you know, every person is different. Awesome. So it might be somewhere, you know, like it's okay. Don't worry. You've got one.
Every vagina is shaped differently.
Right.
Too, so
right.
It could be farther up or down or, you know, different angles help.
Yep. So I think this is very good. I mean, it doesn't share pictures to like try and help. Maybe that would have been nice. I don't know. The one problem I have with it, you can tell me if you disagree, Ellen, I don't like that it's really upselling a course.
I think that's fine, first of all, because this, you know, they have to stay in business.
Yeah, it's they're already charging $30 for this, though,
well, a month. Only if you're subscribed, you know. Still ask it 10 questions for free.
Well said. Okay, continue.
So they do operate somewhat on a free basis.
Yep.
You can pay if you want more in-depth information. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fine for them to say, by the way, if you want more info, you can pay and then go to this course. Because there's probably a lot of science that they would talk about. Like recent research. Like, you know, the shape of the clitoris, for example, it wasn't determined until relatively recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just this little nub on the external parts of your vagina,
right,
or like in your vulva area. It's a huge internal structure that actually like wraps around the vagina too. So there's all sorts of new research that might be included. They might have images or diagrams. Not, like, images of people having sex, you know, but, like, educational information.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, I think it's fine for them to want to pay, to have people pay to access that information, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of work that goes into what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and fair. They can only, you know, put so much into the database before they start putting entire textbooks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, all right, I agree with you on that.
And then, also, I think you get closer to the source of information once you pay. Like, you're actually getting to interact more with, like, the human experts, and not right. just the AI that's like, I don't actually know what sex is, but, like, here's what I've been told to say.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, and this is where I want the conversation to, you know, kind of start to 30-foot it and branch out a bit. I think this is kind of the right way to do it. It's basic, and I'm glad they're saying it's experimental, but this is really kind of the right way to do it, because it's being based upon the work of, I would assume, professionals. You know, I can't vouch for educateds, you know, who are doing the courses. But my part of my concern, and again, I can't, and that's why I say I can't vouch for these people. Okay, there's two things. We have two problems here. One is, I don't trust humans, and I don't trust AI.
So it's a trust issue.
Yeah, sure. It's a trust issue. So, and I'll get into the AI in a second, but I want to talk about the humans first. Because, again, you know, one of the, and fair critiques to come up with is like, well, an AI, how can AI understand human sexuality? You're completely right. It can't, and it never can. And we'll get to that. I want to talk about that. But at the same time, just like we've been discussing this entire time with this article about people not recognizing or not recognizing that they're animals, not appreciating their instincts, you know, all these other things, and failures of language, failures of communication. I've rarely met, so like say ChatGPT did open up the gates and allow you to use something similar to Beducated, and it pulled from the internet. Okay, I'll talk about that in a second, because is there the problem of, well, what about all the AI generated content out there, you know, like that's going to be all bullshit, what can it really understand? I'm actually a little more concerned about the human content, because I don't feel like most humans, and particularly ones that write about sex, actually have an understanding of sex. Like, I don't think that they... Most people just don't know. Like, and I've been around long enough where I've read the Dear Abby, columns in newspapers. I know most people don't remember those, but... you know, like I know most of the information, and I've even also, I work in the PR industry. I've actually worked with clients that are in the sex industry. We'll put it that way. And I mean, I read the responses from professionals, medical professionals even, and all of this. And I mean, and you could say, well, it's my opinion. I don't think it's opinion, but these people get so much dead wrong. And a lot of people who write about sex, they're writing about sex because, frankly, they're fucked up. You know, it's like the preacher standing up on the podium, you know, preaching hellfire and brimstone when they're fucking meth heads, you know, and sleeping with whoever, you know, that's not their wife. You know what I mean? It's do as I say, not as I do. Like, there are, I have met personally, and I mean, I could name the names. I'm not going to. I'm not that kind of guy. But I mean, I'm just laying it out here for people that a lot of the people who write about sex that, say, ChatGPT would even pull from are incredibly fucked up individuals. Like, very, very fucked up people. Okay, so, yeah, I don't trust humans in the first place who put this information out there, you know? Like, what is our perception even of sex? A lot of our perceptions of sex come from Hugh Hefner. Is anybody going to tell me Hugh Hefner was a great human being? And, like, and was a healthy human being? Fuck no! Okay, but, right, but he was, like, calling the shots on what generations of men, and maybe women, but men certainly thought sex and sexuality was. And so, you know, if AI is pulling from humans about what sex is, it's good. Even if AI's doing it, like, a lot of times I'm worried that it's going to come up with crap. Now, again, Beducated might have the best people in the world who are very understanding. That write-up about the G-spot was actually pretty good. Would you agree with that, Ellen?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounded like it was written by a doctor.
Right. And it was respectful and, you know, made the disclaimers and caveats and all that. Like, that's great. You know, somebody who, like, it really, dare I say, it almost came off empathetic. Now, that doesn't mean AI has empathy. I'm just saying that its source material must have been empathetic. Okay, but again, it's pulling from a very small pool. But that's the thing, is, you know, most humans, I don't even really trust them to understand and talk about sex, you know? And so that's the first problem with a lot of this. Do you have anything you want to respond to in that? Because then we can talk about what's the issues with AI.
Yeah, I agree with you that there is a lot of subjective experience that goes into what people write or say about sex. There's there's some hypocrisy for sure. I think it's interesting too that everybody has different experiences and attitudes around sex, and I think that can definitely color some of what they write. That being said, I'm pretty sure that, like, the information being put into Beducated is from, you know, sex professionals, not just bloggers, not just people who are in the industry, but genuine doctors, like people who've been to school for many years, who had a practice or you know, provided some sort of healthcare. And those are the kind of people that you want to be behind this kind of AI. I understand what you're saying, and I think that's always going to be true, no matter who it is that's behind the database for the AI, is that, you know, there is such a wide variety of experience in sexuality, and, you know, there's never going to be one database that covers all of it.
Right.
But I think they're doing their best to be honest about human physiology and to be empathetic and say, like, you know, everybody's different, but in general, this is what you can expect.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and again, I'm hoping that that's the case with Beducated, that they've just got the best people on this. I mean, that one response sounded pretty good. But yeah, and that understanding that everybody's an individual, that is such an important thing to bring up, and kudos for them for programming that to make sure that point gets, you know, across. But I'm just, you know, and so, you know, expanding on that, but if it's pulling from the knowledge base of humanity, it's going to fuck it up. You know, like, you need
I don't think they're doing that.
No, they're not. But I'm just saying that, like, if ChatGPT opened up to where it allowed it, because like I said earlier, most of these LLMs, they as soon as you start asking about sex, they shut down. Like, they're like, oh, no, you know, go seek this person or whatever, like, or, you know, a professional. We can't do that. Which, okay, fair response to make. But like I said, you know, on the flip side of that is that's really a form of censorship, which is its own problem. But then at the same time, you know, asking AI, you know, any kind of advice like this, I think, runs into a severe issue. Particularly that also, I mean, even if you're saying that it pulled entirely from human sources, unless it's a very small data set, like we mentioned with Beducated, but most humans don't get it. You know, that's why we, in my opinion, we live in such a fucked up civilization, is because there's a complete lack of, or there's a broken love story, and there's a lack of understanding of what sex is, what it's about, what it can be, and so on.
Yeah, and I feel like there's some danger, too, in, like, if an AI were created that just pulled information about sex from the open internet, that could lead to some very twisted concepts of sex. Because, like, the majority of sexual content out there is pornography.
Right.
And pornography, by and large, is made for a very specific set of people.
Right.
And that is, you know, white males.
Right.
So, what happens in pornography also is not realistic. I mean, a lot of it is just centered around pleasing the man. and what do men want to see? And granted, over the last like decade or so, there's been more of a movement around providing sexual content for, you know, a variety of sexual interests. But still, that there's no way that can cover everybody's unique interests and abilities and experiences. So I think that, you know, all things considered, having that restriction on sexuality for the open AIs might not be the worst thing. Like, I hear what you're saying, that censorship is bad, and yes, it is. But so is the pornography industry.
Yes. Yeah, you're on point. I get you. I'm still debating of which is ultimately worse, but this is the thing, is that, like, and I think the real answer is something outside of that, because the real answer is, you know, like, don't bring this shit to AI, like...
Right.
As in...
Because, you know, AI doesn't understand.
No, it doesn't understand. I mean, if you had a raw dog AI that said, you asked it, what are humans into sexually? You know, an AI, logically... would look at the largest data set, right? Okay, like, what do the most people access? What gets accessed the most on this giant internet that I have access to?
Yeah, it would use its algorithms to find an answer.
Yeah, exactly. What would it come up with? Porn. Because porn, 90% of the internet's fucking porn. Okay? and I mean, that's the classic song, the internet is for porn. And so it would base all of its answers on pornography. And pornography is not really healthy, you know. I mean, we could get into how do you define pornography. I mean, pornography really should be defined as it's the sexual act without a narrative, without a story and emotion behind it, you know. But bottom line being, it would pull from that. And wow, like, the advice, the horrible advice that it would give, you know, to people based upon the largest data set out there, that being porn. I know there's a thing called ethical porn. That's a whole other conversation, but, and even that I have some umbrage with. Okay, but, it'd be a disaster.
I don't think pornography in itself is a negative thing. I just think the vast majority of it isn't made to optimize pleasure.
But right. And pleasure, holistic pleasure.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, totally.
And also, I don't think an AI would be able to comprehend that.
Yeah, well, that's the other part of this. And this is what I love that you brought up about language earlier. And what we were talking about, how, like, well, what kind of sex are we talking about? What kind of love are we talking about? Like, these words have a million different meanings. And there are meanings that, like, I think we even illustrated in our conversation, there's not really words for.
Yeah.
You know, and so what can the AI fucking pull from? How could it even understand that? Because even if it could understand things based upon a dictionary definition, even that runs into flaws, right? There are limitations. Language always has limitations. And AI is ultimately beholden. Sorry to break it to you people. AI are not spiritual machines. Okay?
I can't believe you even have to say that.
Well, I feel like I do. And I'm sure that's a subject that's going to go on for a while. But there are things... Ellen, like, look. Here. Again, you are a sexpert.
In my own world, yes.
I mean, you are...
You're just living in my world, baby.
Oh, well, gladly. 100%. When you have an orgasm, a really, really great orgasm.
Yeah.
You know, like, mm-hmm. I provide.
Mm-hmm. No. True.
Thank you. How would you describe it? What words would you use?
It's a complete... I don't know. Blank out? Explosion?
Yeah, right. The words disappear.
Yeah, there are no words.
Same for me. And boy, do you give me some fucking amazing work. The greatest orgasm I've ever had in my life.
Some of the best descriptions I've heard are, like, the French expression for orgasm, the petit mort.
Oh, the little death?
Yes, yeah. Touching God is another way of describing it. You know, there's these, like, metaphors that we can use to kind of describe the feeling. But it, the reality is, it's just that. It's like such a powerful, overwhelming feeling that you cannot describe it.
Right. And that's because we are spiritual beings. AI is not. We are. We're also physical. And those are intertwined. One doesn't exist without the other. But we have, and when I say spiritual in this sense, because I hate that word, but when I use it in this sense, we have parts of existence that exist beyond programmatic language, that exist beyond the broken divide, that exist beyond. It could just end with that, the word beyond. AI doesn't have that. All AI has is ones and zeros and terms and all this shit. You know, like, that's all it's got. And honestly, you know, the point I was trying to make earlier, and it's a point I've made a billion times over in my podcasting career, is, and of course I'm pulling from the research of, you know, William Marston, but from 100 years ago, but his point is salient, is that where do the terms love and fear and sadness and all, like, where do these terms come from? What do they describe? They come from fucking, in the English language anyway, they come from Victorian novelists. They made the shit up. Like, these words, these are words, you know, like, our concepts of emotions, we just pastiched words onto them without actually understanding them. And I would argue that the words are always going to be pastiche. They can't really express, like, how do you express the depth of sadness? All you can do is say the depth. You can't measure it. There's no, you're not going to send a submarine down, you know, however many fathoms, right? You're not going to say, oh, well, how sad are you? Oh, I'm 10 fathoms sad. You know, what the fuck does that mean? And so we say the depths of sadness. Like, this is the problem. I don't want to get lost on this, but this whole thing drives me up the wall because they're like, oh yeah, we're reaching artificial general intelligence. The fuck you are! You know, we can't even describe what things like sadness or what the orgasm is. I mean, I love that. Like you said, the French term little death, right? Okay, well then you ask the question, and this is part of the limits of language that I was getting to earlier. What is death? Well, good luck getting an answer to that one from anybody. You know, like, who the hell knows? I mean, sure, we could look it up in the dictionary and it would say, you know, the ceasing of you know, biological functions or something, but that has nothing to do with an orgasm, so clearly that's not what the French mean. Granted, what do the French mean at any given moment? I don't know, okay? But I do my best, all right?
Anyway, they're very artistic people.
They are. And Satan bless them, okay? I'm just glad that they didn't rule the world yet, because then we'd never have, like, the concept of time travel. But whatever. They didn't have a word for that. It's a very famous story. Anyway, so, which also proves our whole point here. But regardless, like, AI cannot get this. AI cannot understand sex. AI cannot understand love. AI cannot understand emotion. It just fucking can't, because all it has is language, and these are things that exist beyond language. It's a very key thing. What do you got? I feel like I'm just, like, screaming from the mountaintop here.
Oh, yeah. I was just along for the ride there.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. There is no way that AI can describe to you what good sex is.
Right.
It's basically just going to tell you whatever it is that you want that maximizes pleasure. Because, like, that's, you know, what the database tells it to say.
Right.
And, you know, that's accurate, that's true, but what the experience is for each individual, that can vary wildly.
Yes. Yeah, and you're a person, especially you, Ellen, and it's a big reason I want to have this conversation with you. I mean, you're very in touch with your sexuality, very open,
Thank you.
You know, far beyond what the bulk of civilization is open to.
Well, maybe not at work.
Well, sure. During the day, you know, but then at night, oh.
Yeah, things change after I come home.
Yeah, collar comes on, and oh man, it's all right. Anyway, but this is the thing, is that you're a person, again, who is, I would argue, is not beholden by a lot of the censorship or self-censorship imposed by civilization.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that is a compliment, absolutely, all right? And you can't even describe what an orgasm is. And that's not a knock on you.
It would take a couple pages of the written word to really, you know, to expound upon it.
And it would be poetry, though. It wouldn't be a dictionary. It wouldn't be an encyclopedia entry, right?
No, no. I think, you know, for any human experience, you have to describe things from all these different aspects. You know, there's, right, like, the way that it physically feels. There's the physiological component to it. There's the emotional component to it. There's all of these different dimensions. And it's something that, you know, it would take, you know, 10 pages of written word in order to describe all of those things. And even then, that doesn't encapsulate what an experience is. You have to actually feel it yourself.
Yes. There is a word we have, one of the most powerful words we have in the English language. The word is ineffable. And we have to have that word because there are things we know language can't describe. And what the fuck does an AI do when it hits the ineffable?
It will never have that gestalt.
Yes.
Of, right, that experience.
Right. I mean, you know, it's the classic thing, like, how do you beat AI? Tell it to solve pi.
Solve?
Yeah, solve pi, right? Tell it to do, like you know, list off pi, basically. Like.
Well, it would just be stuck.
Yeah, it would, exactly.
Because the number is irrational.
Exactly. What the human being can do is say, fuck you. I'm not going to do that. You know, as to where the AI is programmed to, no, respond. You know what I mean? And, like, give me the answer. Like, that's what this generative AI, so these LLMs are all about, is give me the answer. And it'll just keep going in a loop, you know, forever. But we can just say stop. Anyway, that's just a small point on why we're better. But, you know, the classic thing that artificial intelligence is no match for natural stupidity, right? It's like we go to 10 on pi, and we're like, nah, I'm done. Anyway. Sorry, did you have more you wanted to get in on that?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, AI gets lost when it hits the ineffable. It just doesn't, like, it literally does not compute. And now here's another point, you know, that I want to explore, kind of capping this off. I know there's a lot of people who are hopeful that AI can just, like, eventually, it will hit AGI, and it'll just fix things. Like, okay, yeah, humans suck. Sure, I'm not gonna argue too hard against that. Humans suck. So AI will come in, it'll be this hyper-rational being, and it'll just set everything right. Okay, and it'll govern us, or it'll whatever.
Is it gonna set my daddy issues right?
Yeah, right. Don't do that. No. Please. So, you know, but there's people who really want that, and they expect that. You know, and I think a lot of people in Silicon Valley, like, I think, like, Sam Altman, the guy behind OpenAI, the guy behind ChatGPT, like, I think he's pushing for that. It's like, yeah, no, I want AI to fucking run all this shit. I mean, really, they have, talk about not daddy issues, they have mommy issues.
Oh, well, is AI going to make people stop hating themselves and being self-destructive?
Well, the argument would be that the super hyper-rational thing, AI, would figure out how to convince people that, oh, no, you don't need to be hateful, you don't need to do this, you don't need to do that. Okay, but here, and you raise a great point, though. The thing is, it can't do that because it doesn't understand the nature, say, of hate. It doesn't understand, like, here's what I'm getting at. In my opinion, sex, which is a powerful aspect of romantic love, which ultimately comes down to the deepest connection with another human being, which we all seek,
because... But it's not just that.
No, right. But it's also the walls coming down. You know, it's the vulnerability. Tell me more of what you think it is.
Well, so you said sex is an expression of romantic love.
Yes.
Which I don't think that it always is. I mean, you yourself can vouch for this.
You're totally right.
It's not always romantic love. Sometimes it's just lust.
Yes.
Straight up.
Yes. No, you're completely right about that. Okay? And again, we just ran into it again. We're just using the word sex. Whoa, what do you mean? Right? Like, what is that? What kind of sex?
So, yeah, I just think that, like, in that instance, we shouldn't be keeping sex in that small verbal cage of, like, it's just an expression of romantic love,
yeah,
and of the walls coming down. Because there is such a thing as unhealthy sex, too.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, all right. So I love the particularity. So I'll shift this a little bit. So there is, sex can be an integral part of romantic love, but romantic love doesn't have to include sex, and sex doesn't have to include romantic love. Okay. So, but, I do think that romantic love is, I mean, I think even asexual people want romantic love, you know, like everybody wants that connection without walls, you know?
Yeah, of course they do.
Right.
And that's fine to want.
Right.
But again, like you're saying, it doesn't have to include sex.
No.
Though most of the time it does.
Right. But like, what is that deeper connection? What are these connections? Or say sex is a part of it. What is sex and all this? The reason I'm bringing this up is that if AI cannot truly understand what motivates us, okay? Because to an AI, to quote Satan, Al Pacino, Satan, once again, as I did earlier, you know, love is biochemically no different than eating large quantities of chocolate. Like, it looks exactly the same. But is that the same thing? No, it's not fucking the same thing. Okay? But to AI, it would be. But this is my point. Is that, no, AI is not going to become some hyper-rational being that's going to set all of us straight, because it cannot fucking understand what motivates us. It cannot understand what we truly want. It doesn't know, and it can never know.
And in line with what you were just saying, I think what a lot of people want is to feel safe being vulnerable.
Yes.
And like you were saying, you know, lowering those walls, that's an important aspect of it, is allowing ourselves to be vulnerable and open to potentially being hurt, because there's this opportunity for us to feel love and connection.
Right.
And all of the things that humans are driven to want from an instinctual side.
Yes.
And it's wonderful, and it's the best feeling, I think, that people can have.
Right, right.
But that's, again, something that AI cannot experience.
Exactly.
Is that fear, that trepidation, and the elation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, AI is not going to take over and make everything right. It cannot. I mean, why is there violence? Why is there death? Why is there hate? Why are there all these problems in the world? And I think they all ultimately do come down to broken hearts. It all, you know, in fact, William Marston famously said that, you know, we're not going to solve anything with laws. We can only solve it by, you know, resolving the mysteries of men's hearts. And AI can't do that. And it never can. The irony is, though, also, So get that idea that AI somehow is going to make everything fucking better. No, it's not. Okay, get that out of... Everybody can dump that. The other part is, though, because, like we've explored, that everybody's different, like you've also said, Ellen, no one else can make everything right for you either. You know, like, just like AI can't take over and suddenly make everything all right, government, in any form of human authority, can never resolve our problems. Why? Because what? It thinks that the issue is that, oh shit, you know, this boat can't get from A to B, you know, and so we got to send a military out there to make sure that boat can get out there, you know, and stuff like that. Like, what is that? Doesn't solve a goddamn thing.
Yeah, I think maybe, there's a misattribution of the problem. So a lot of people, you know, they do feel fearful. They don't feel safe.
Yeah.
In sharing what they really feel on the inside.
Yeah.
And, you know, that causes a lot of psychological issues for people, is that, you know, lack of confidence in their surroundings to be able to express themselves
right
as they truly want to.
Right.
And not feel judged. And
right.
Know that they can do so without harm to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of safety that they're seeking is not necessarily the safety of the protection of guns and tanks and helicopters and jet fighters. You know, it's the safety of, you know, another person just embracing them.
Yes.
And letting them know that it's okay.
Yes. Yes. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. And that's another one of those phrases that I've always said is just so powerful, is for you to just hear from someone else, it's okay. In fact, I moved to New Hampshire because someone else said, it's okay. You know, and that was, those are the exact words. It's a really, yeah, those kinds of things, like, again, AI is not going to provide that for you. Yes, someone else can provide that, you know, like, because we kind of define our, we define ourselves based upon externalities, right? What is my individuality without something outside of me, you know, to kind of bounce it off of? What do you have a response to that?
No, please continue.
Yeah. And that's, I think, a reason that we're very much a social species. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that other people can really solve our problems. We're the ones that still have to do the acts. We're the ones that still have to do the work. We're the ones that still have to do the self-archaeology, the self-repair, you know, and so on. And yeah, I feel like a lot of the hype around generative AI is, around AI in general, I guess I should say, is more of that, I don't want to solve it. I want someone else to solve it. I need mommy here. I need this or that, you know. And look, that's just, we're not going to get anywhere if you're just, if everyone's just constantly looking for someone else to solve their problem.
Yeah, nobody else can live for you.
No. Yeah, no, not at all.
Especially not AI. The best they can do is help to educate you.
Right.
And you have to make your decisions, you know, based on the best available evidence, but you still have to make your own decisions.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, if I was going to make an analogy, like, you know, you could have an AI, like DALL-E 3 could tell you, oh, no, this picture I just generated for you that you wanted to be green, yeah, it's green. And you just go around thinking, oh, well, I guess it must be green then. But maybe you end, maybe you're colorblind, but you never go and get that checked out to find out, you know? I mean, that like, a blind trust in a lot of this stuff is such a huge issue. Anyway.
Yeah, there's just been so many examples I've seen online where these AI are just straight up wrong. Like, yeah. You could ask it to list a philosopher that starts, like, their name starts with the letter M, mm-hmm. and it'll give you, like, Aristotle.
Right.
This is a philosopher whose name starts with the letter M. And it's like, obviously that's not true.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, exactly. Or even imagine, you know, like with the G-spot. Imagine asking an AI, you know, show me a picture, or, like, generate a picture of... Because, you know, it can't just pull any picture because of copyright, which is a whole other issue.
All right, okay. But it's also an internal organ, kind of difficult to get a picture of.
Well, I'm not even worried. Like, here would be the prompt. Show me a picture of how to please a woman's G-spot. And the generative AI, it'll probably, like, show a hand with 10 fingers and, like, you know, do
12 fingers.
And it's like, oh, well, shit, I gotta have 12 fingers. I mean, it's gonna fuck it up, you know?
It can't even get hands right. They're so fucking creepy.
Right, right. And of course, the response from everybody else is, it'll get better. It'll get better. Why? Because of human input. That's the only reason that it gets better. It's not because AI is anything goddamn special. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and as we've discussed, most humans don't even know how to please the G-spot.
Right, right. I mean, that's the other issue. Again, you know, if humans are the ones that make it better, well, you have 70% of the population that's going to be like, wait a minute, the G-spot doesn't exist. You know, like, the AI, this thing's a fucking liar, you know, and they would respond, like, what's the problem with the picture? G-spot doesn't exist. And then we run into... You know, basically the sexual dark ages that we had for hundreds of years again. But whatever. Folks, you got to solve your own problems. You got to figure out, I mean, it's important to create, like, I guess, what is the resolution to this? Ultimately, I mean, I think what Beducated is doing is, kind of bare bones, but okay. Like, it doesn't seem terrible. You know, this isn't, like, the worst idea I've ever heard, but it's not the worst idea because it's using a very limited and professional data set.
And here's the thing, is I think that there's all of this information, the facts about sex and sexual health,
mm-hmm.
These are probably recorded in textbooks somewhere, but nobody wants to read a fucking textbook in their free time, which is unfortunate because they're actually incredible sources of information.
Totally.
But the AI chatbot is kind of the vessel for transmission of information nowadays.
Yeah,
And for better or worse, that's what we have. So I think for the tools that are available online, this is probably a good thing. But mm-hmm. ultimately, it can only inform so much.
Yeah, it can only go so far. And even the courses themselves, you know, run by the humans can only go so far as well, which is, you know, a really key thing.
So I guess our opinion here is that instead of taking the AI chatbot at its word, you should, you know, explore these things with your partner and experience it for yourself.
Yes.
And feel free to say the uncomfortable taboo things that you want to experience.
Right. Totally. I think we should do that right now. So we'll go do that. And I think we'll wrap this episode up. Ellen, as always, an absolute pleasure, as everything is with you.
Thank you. And I try. I really do.
Yeah, you succeed every time.
Yeah, this was great. We should do this again soon.
Yes, we will. In fact, we, like I said, we have some pretty big plans going on. In fact, you know, if people haven't yet, just go to nwo.red. That's the website. Go to nwo.red. Look us up on Instagram. Ellen is sharing the most amazing shit, and I'm not kidding. Like, bread recipes. And you might think, wait a minute, why the hell would I go to Instagram for bread recipes? You don't understand just how great this is. This is a revelation.
Wow, thank you. Yeah, it's great bread. And Brian is sharing pictures of things that I never expected that he would.
Oh, boy. And do they get people all excited. Well, anyway, might be related to our subject. But yeah, nwo.red. And if you want to follow us on Instagram, all the links are right there. And, of course, everything else that we have going on, including some Ellen's artwork and plenty of other things that people can purchase that stuff, right?
Some of them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so hit that URL, nwo.red, and everything you can check out by us is there. But for this episode of Sovereign Tech X, I think we'll wrap this one up, and we will see all of you on the other side.
Woo!
Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Each time that I doth turn around, my brethren always gather round, always looking at me from top to bottom, looking at my unspeakable regions.
They are quite unspeakable.